All right, we're going to check in with our video here. I think we're all set. This is about 8 to 9 minutes, and then we'll have about 4 questions to kind of debrief. Here we go.
Sixth, easygoing, laid-back kind of guy. Nothing seemed to faze him. While others complained about the storm clouds threatening their lives, Tom seemed to live in his own personal bubble of sunshine. But 50 days ago, Tom started having bad headaches. All day, every day.
Twenty days ago,
worn out from the pain, lack of sleep, and inability to think straight, he went to his doctor about the problem. The doctor examined him and concluded the migraines might be due to an allergic reaction. He suggested some changes to Tom's diet, which Tom followed, but the headaches got worse. Ten days ago, Tom had to take a leave of absence from work. For days, he lay in his bed in the dark, trying not to move or think. One day ago, with no food left in the house, Tom tried to go to the store, but he passed out in the middle of the kitchen floor. When he woke up 3 hours later, he called 911. The ambulance arrived and hurried him to the local hospital. 1 minute ago, Tom got the results of the extensive tests from the last 24 hours. As he sat there, alone in the pre-op room, he was anything but cool, calm, and collected. In a few minutes, an orderly would be arriving to wheel him off to the operating room. There, a team of neurosurgeons would try to remove a cancerous tumor from his brain. The doctor had indicated they had less than a 30% chance of removing all the tumor. And even if they did, he said, it was likely that Tom would have some motor skill damage as a result of the operation. The easygoing, carefree guy had disappeared completely. What had once been calm waters and gentle breezes was now a perfect storm of raging currents and hurricane-force winds. And the questions raced through Tom's mind. Why had this happened to him? Where was God in this dark and stormy time? And what hope did he have for the future? Perhaps you can relate to Tom's story. Life is humming along nicely when, bam, a number of crises occur all at once. A layoff plus a recession, a disease plus a job transfer, a relationship breakup plus a college rejection. You can handle one challenge, but two or three at a time? You're blindsided by an unexpected crisis that keeps getting worse and worse. You try to battle your way through, but keep getting knocked down by one bad event after another. Maybe you, like Tom, are wondering where God is in the middle of this terrible storm. Is he anywhere near? Will you even survive? Peter and the disciples could relate. When we read that they were caught in the storm on the Sea of Galilee, it's easy to overlook just how dangerous the situation was. Such storms in the region were akin to a sumo wrestler's belly flop on a kiddie pool. The northern valley acted like a wind tunnel, compressing and hosing squalls onto the lake. Waves as tall as 10 feet were common. This combination of high winds plus high waves made the situation treacherous. It was one thing for Peter and the disciples to battle the winds. That was enough of a challenge. But when you add the winds plus the waves, it was a recipe for disaster. Today, mariners might call such a tempest a perfect storm. Not perfect in the sense of ideal, but perfect in the sense of combining factors. Every element works together to create the insurmountable disaster. What's more, it's clear from Matthew's gospel the disciples battled the storm for some time before Jesus appeared. The disciples' journey began at nightfall. Jesus had performed the miracle of feeding the 5,000 earlier in the day and then had sent the disciples on ahead so he could spend some time in prayer. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. When does Christ come to them? About 3 o'clock in the morning. If evening began at 6 o'clock and Christ came at 3 in the morning, the disciples were alone in the storm for 9 hours. 9 tempestuous hours, long enough for more than one disciple to ask, "Where is Jesus? He knows we're in the boat. Is God anywhere near?" It's the question we all ask when hit with the perfect storm. And Paul's answer to that question is concise and clear. "The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." As we do our part, rejoice in the Lord, pursue a gentle spirit, pray about everything, and cling to gratitude, God does His part. He bestows upon us the peace of God. Note that this is not a peace from God. Our Father gives us the very peace of God. He downloads the tranquility of the throne room into our world, resulting in an inexplicable calm. We should be worried, but we aren't. We should be upset, but we're comforted. The peace of God transcends all logic and scheming and efforts to explain it. This kind of peace is not just a human achievement. It is a gift from above. Jesus said, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Jesus promises you His version of peace, the peace that calmed His heart when He was falsely accused, the peace that steadied His voice when He spoke to Pilate, the peace that kept His thoughts clear and heart pure as He hung on the cross. This was His peace. This can be your peace. Paul tells us more about the peace of God. He says it guards our hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. God takes responsibility for our hearts and minds. As we celebrate Him and pray to Him, He constructs a fortress around us, protecting us from the attacks of the devil. Paul had firsthand knowledge of this kind of peace, for he had also endured his share of perfect storms. He had learned to believe in God's sovereignty and trust His protection and rely on His mercy. Paul's past could have caused him to experience immense feelings of guilt that brought him anxiety and robbed him of peace. After all, he had orchestrated the deaths of Christians. He was an ancient version of a terrorist, taking believers into custody and then spilling their blood. He was also a legalist to the core. Before he knew Christ, he had spent a lifetime trying to save himself. His salvation depended upon his perfection, on his performance. But then came the Damascus Road moment. Jesus appeared. And once Paul saw Jesus, he couldn't see anymore. He couldn't see any more value in his resume. He couldn't see any more merit in his merits, worth in his good works. He couldn't see any more reasons to boast about anything he had done. And he couldn't see any option except to spend the rest of his life talking less about himself and more about Jesus. He became the great poet of grace.
All right, we're going to stop it there.